We're now on agenda item four, sustainability-related reporting. I was really pleased with the last discussion, last two discussions, both the feedback on our advice and the update of the board activities. Because as important as sustainability is, and as it really is such a game changer in so many respects, both for us as the advisory council, but also Lee and his staff. It's going to change so many things that we'll have to adapt to in the coming months. But there is, as always, the everyday work of the IASB, and as Andreas demonstrated, there is still quite a bit going on, which of course doesn't surprise anyone. But it was good to get that update, Lee. Why don't you take us through what's happened, maybe more importantly, what's going to happen, and the way forward. Congratulations again, Lee, for everything that's happened in the last couple of weeks. Floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Bill. And Advisory Council, first of all, I before commencing any sort of presentation, I do have some real thanks and appreciation that I would like to make. I think the first is to you, Bill, as the chair of the Advisory Council. Thank you for all of your leadership and guidance, particularly through the course of 2021, as we've navigated to particular milestones with the ISSB. Secondly, to each member of the Advisory Council, thank you for your advice, your insights, your guidance, your encouragement as we've navigated through 2021 as well. Thirdly, to many of your organisations that come here, your organisations have played a particular role, some more publicly than others, but all importantly in again guiding us at the foundation, particularly through 2021. I should add there, for those that have made public statements since last week, thank you for making those, and all of that's been brought together, and we can provide more sense around that piece. Finally, the last thank you also comes with a level of apology, because many of the Advisory Council members have written to me regarding the announcement and expressing thanks and congratulations. I haven't replied to all of those at this time, so please don't feel I'm not going to. They will. It's just been the last week or so has been very hectic, and unfortunately the uptake of emails has not been as prominent as what I'd like it to be, but rest assured I will get there. So with that, what I would like to do is, we have prepared some slides that I will move through, Bill. In some ways they are taking us a little bit from last week, again trying to highlight some of the engagement that we will be doing going forward. And as well, there's an area that I'd like to start further dialogue with the council and get their insights and assistance with as well, particularly regarding a theme of emerging and developing markets. And that's an element, Bill, that we'll come to, but you might recall as you developed up the report and recommendations for engagement with the Advisory Council that you presented to the trustees, that was a key element of thinking from your recommendations as well. So I'd like to try and tie those two pieces together. I think my colleague Mark Byatt should be on this call as well. And for those that don't know Mark, he heads up our external affairs, communications and brand activities. And some of you may come back with some questions about particular responses or what was said in jurisdictions and so forth after our public announcements, and Mark can certainly do that. So I might look to Sam if we can get the lovely... If we can get the slides up, please.
Jenny's sort them out. It just might take a moment.
Sorry, Lee, just bear with me 1 second. I will have them with you.
That's all right, Jenny. Whilst they're coming up, I might just continue on and we can catch up. And when Erky made his opening remarks to council, he really focused in on three key elements of the announcements that were made at COP last week. In fact, 1 week ago, it was last Wednesday here in the UK. So if we could go to the next slide, Jenny. Thank you. These were the three key elements that he spoke about. And already, Bill, in some of the comments passed by the advisory council members, some of this was intertwined in remarks. I won't go through that particular slide, but I will come back to them in a little bit more detail. I think what Erky was able to give some insights is where some areas of the announcements were pretty well expected, where others probably, I think he used the expression, were of a positive surprise in the feedback that we'd received. Next slide, thank you, Jenny. As what we saw at the time of the announcement at COP, that there was an aggregation of 38 jurisdictions from either their finance ministers or central bank governors that came out publicly to welcome the announcement of the board and its work program. And, you know, we've listed there those that have been part of that statement, which we were, you know, warmly received. And many, I know, took the opportunity to directly contact Erky as well, given his presence in both central banking and finance ministers' engagements. So that photo there was taken shortly after the conclusion, and I think most would be familiar with Erky, but he's the gentleman there in the standing in the on the left-hand side, the first in on the left. Next slide, thank you, Jenny. So these elements will really just unpack a little bit more of what was those three key elements. Obviously, the announcement of the creation of the ISSB, focusing in on the investor needs, developing the global baseline. These are the concepts that Advisory Council have been engaged with as we've moved through our different steps during 2021. Thank you, Jenny. If we could go to the next. Thank you. This was the element around consolidation. And there's still more work to be done here, but realistically, we've brought together in a legally binding way the consolidation of both CDSB and the Value Reporting Foundation. And just to remind Council, Value Reporting Foundation really was itself a recent merger between SASB and the IIRC. And there we just got also that connectivity with the Technical Readiness Working Group, where there's been reference to the assistance from particularly the TCFD and the World Economic Forum, but also where we've been able to intertwine that with the IASB. Thank you, Jenny. And this did also receive some comments around the prototype requirements. So these were put out. They're called, just to remind everyone, the prototypes. This is the work of the TRWG new board to consider what they wish to do with these prototypes and all of the recommendations that the Technical Readiness Working Group have made. You know, I just think this is great work done by these organisations and these individuals in these organisations. And it was always in the theme, Council, of giving that running start to the new board. Thank you, Jenny. And again, this next slide, just to give a bit of a visual, I know people like to get this at times, of the sense of the streams of activities of the new board all moving through to, in effect, delivery of meeting the investors and other capital market participants' needs. Some reminder about composition of the new board. There will be 14 board members, the majority of whom will be full-time. Qualifications, we've got to make sure there's the right balance here in the diversity of skills and experience of the new board, expertise and importantly, geographical balance as well. I might touch on that a little bit further when we look to the next steps. Thank you, Jenny. Part of what we announced as well was the creation of a sustainability consultative committee. You might recall this was something that we'd been encouraged by IOSCO to consider, and this is really trying to find that right means in which we've got that bridge to the work of which the new board would be doing on the focus on the investor needs to that broader sustainability area as well. We have four multilaterals, some of whom are already parts of the advisory council, and we're working through steps on how we will broaden that membership as well. And I'd like to also talk through how we want to bring out further skills and experience into the advisory council, particularly from that consultative committee as well. We are working through the creation of an advisory forum. Some might be familiar already with what we do with ASAF on the financial reporting side. And again, it's not going to be exactly like ASAF, but something of a similar style that we think can provide great assistance for jurisdictional engagement with the new board as well. And again, obviously, we've got to make sure that we continue to benefit from the skills and expertise of the council, and particularly as we move through this broader remit now as well. Thank you, Jenny. Now, we did make reference to the multi-location approach. Erky spoke on this as well. More work to be done in this space, but we felt it was important at the time of talking about the creation of the new board that there was a sense of how this global footprint would come about. And so more work to be done, but those bullet points there give the sentiment of the direction that we are taking. Thanks, Jenny. Lovely. Next steps, multiple questions, and I suspect we may get some in the next piece, Bill, as we navigate through. Great questions coming through on when will we hear about who is going to be the chair and the vice chairs, potentially more than one vice chair. There's provision for up to two. And the short answer on that is those processes are underway right at this time. And whilst there is quite some work still to be done, you know, we are aiming for a mid-December public announcements. And again, that's something that we would make sure the Advisory Council are aware in advance of any public statements. And again, shortly we will be moving through our steps to populate the remaining seats of the board. The work of the TRWG, as I've mentioned, needs to then move to the new board or the leadership of the new board, and for them to consider what steps they may wish to take, particularly regarding those prototype documents, but broader work plan and future priorities. Advisory groups, we've touched on that we need to continue to grow and get operational. Consolidation, still more work to be done with those that have been consolidated in. But I've got to say, you know, the spirit council of where we've got to and wish to do is really strong. So it encourages you a lot when you get that sense of really constructive engagement. And as I've just touched on there on location, much more to be done in bringing that challenging area together. And finally, Jenny, if we could, just some steps. As always, I look to the Advisory Council to help us as we move through these next stages. If you haven't had an opportunity, by all means, finding some time in yourself or your organisations to look at the prototypes, as it may give an early indication of the direction of travel that the new board will be taking. Getting ready for public consultation into early 2022, and obviously there's some alerts there. But, you know, we want to set out a program, I think, Bill, with your leadership and engagement, of milestones with the new board looking into 2022 and beyond, and how, for our first meeting, we might be able to set those milestones out so that the Advisory Council can see a flow of program of work, which will be a little bit different, because 2021, obviously we had steps, each of which was a stage gate. Now that we're through those stage gates, I think we can certainly set out a more lengthier program to engage with council. Let's keep going, Jenny, on to the next area where I'm certainly looking for advice, which is really around this piece of engaging with the emerging and developing economies and markets. Thank you, Jenny. This was an area, a council that came through in range of different communications back to the trustees and to foundation staff. I've picked one element out here just to give you the context, which was through, you know, the fantastic work that the G20 Sustainable Finance Working Group has been doing. But they gave a clear message that in thinking through the creation of the new board and the work that it's doing, how can that really enhance capacity building for the SMEs and for the emerging markets? It was a really strong message back to us saying, great, you're doing all this work with certain jurisdictions, need to remain focused, and particularly as you build out your global footprint, not necessarily another locations of offices, but how will you structure this to make sure you get the very best engagement you can. And so that's part of what I wanted to just bring initially to the table today. As I said, Bill, it fills neatly into a theme or a recommendation that you brought to the trustees as well when thinking about how to enhance the Advisory Council. So there may be some overlap in thinking both the council and for the new board in how we do that. Jenny, if you could go to the next slide. I just wanted to give a sentiment already that there is engagement. So through the ISB, there's a range of activities that do occur. You'll see on that third area, which was touched on earlier in remarks about the IFRS for SME standards, you know, already questions are coming through saying, is that something or a style of approach that the new board will be doing as well? And whilst, you know, the leadership isn't in place there, it's a very valid question that we need to be able to respond to fairly soon. Jenny, the last area, if we could just go to the questions, please. Thank you. And I'm not looking to get into great focus on these questions at this time, but these were here to provide a set of context around this theme of getting the right level of engagement for emerging and developing economies and markets. Clearly, we've got some specific reference there to the IFRS for SMEs, but also thinking about capacity building and best forms of engagement. And I think the beauty here, if I can say this genuinely, is the Advisory Council brings... The membership is diverse and allows perspectives to come. And so whether we get through this today to a degree or whether it's something that we just build into the agenda going forward for council or whether people wish to reach out afterwards, happy to do either way. So, Bill, I'm going to pause there. In a way, I wanted to first of all thank and recognise what the milestone was last week, and that the journey, both as a collective of the council, but individuals and individual organisations had played to that milestone. And in some ways, as our chairman spoke earlier, you know, through the milestone and now the deeper and heavier work begins. But I did want to also give this sentiment around, you know, this really key theme or priority of engagement with the emerging markets as being something we need to think more about and would welcome the advice of council. As well, as I mentioned, we do have Mark Byatt online as well. And so if there's specific questions council have about reactions or responses, Mark will be able, post-announcement, be able to give some colour to that as well. So I think I pause and pass back to you, Bill, to navigate through wherever council would like to discuss.
Lee, thank you very much. That was really well done, really informative. If you think about everything that's been that you and your team have done to get the ISSB formed so quickly. And this is, I've been through this before. I know what it's like to get a group off the ground. You did it quickly in a transparent way. You've given the new group with the technical working group, you've given the new group a running start, as you and Neely have referred to it. So it really is impressive. I'll open the floor in just a second, and we're going to start with Greg. But for our purposes, for the purposes of the Advisory Council, let's keep a few things in mind, and I think we'll have to have a discussion about this probably at our January meeting, but it's going to be an ongoing topic. And think about what are the implications for the Advisory Council. There's a question of membership, and expertise. You know, one answer to the expertise issue is just like all the other issues that we as the Advisory Council address, you've got your own expertise, but you've got expertise within your organization. How best to leverage that expertise when it comes to sustainability? I mentioned a second ago the size of the council. 50 is it's a big number, but it's certainly manageable. Do we need to expand it to make sure we've got the expertise? That's something else we need to address as we move forward. This question that Lee has raised, the engagement with the rest of the world, particularly emerging markets and developing economies, this is so important. This is the global, like everything we do and everything the trustees and the board already do, these are global issues, and that's particularly important with sustainability. How do we engage with the rest of the world, particularly emerging and developing markets? And then finally, just our own working modalities, let's call it. We provide support for the trustees and for the board. We've got a whole new dimension. We've got providing for a new board. How do we factor that in how do we make sure we've got the proper bandwidth to do that? And this speaks to the question, but it's not for discussion so much today. Just our meeting modalities. We've met virtually the last 2 years. As things continue to move in the right direction, I hope. How does in-person meetings look? And this is something we discussed before. How do we complement or supplement those in-person meetings with virtual meetings like this, which have proven to be quite effective? So there's I have a long list of questions that we need to discuss. But this is just to give you a flavor. I'm so focused on what are the implications of the new board. What are the implications for us as the advisory council? Let me open the floor. Lee, thank you again for that introduction. Greg, I'm going to start with you, and then we'll see who else would like the floor. But Greg, over to you, please.
Thank you. I'd just like to echo congratulations to Lee and their team. I thought it was a great effort, and also the sort of political wins of being able to get a diverse group of efforts into one home is a great achievement. I'm actually repeating something that I said as a few meetings back, but it just reminded me when you brought up the emerging markets. I've mentioned before that South Africa has a established regime for reporting ESG, and that's existed for 20, 25 years. I'm no longer close in on that, but I note that we've got three or four members of the advisory committee that are resident in South Africa and part of the accounting establishment in that market. I well advise to go and have a look at that so that we, because they have learned a lot of lessons and, we don't want to reinvent the wheel, and if emerging markets are focused. As far as I know, when I look at other markets worldwide, that's pretty unique. You don't see it in Asia, you don't see it in other parts of Africa or South America. So anyway, just wanted to repeat something I've said before. It's worth having a look at. Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you, Greg. Okay, let's hear from Javier and then Giuseppe. Javier, please.
Hi, thank you, Bill. Thank you, Lee, for your comment. That was very good. I have 2 points I would like to address. I would like to know your views about that. One is, what are your views about the role of and participation of investors in the development of the new sustainability standards? Where do you see that will be participating? As you know, we are very involved with the financial standard, other side. And the second question that is also very important as investors, and I think I have to say, we have been discussing, and I think we are a little concerned. How do you see within the context of the new standards, sustainability standards by IFRS, the announcement made by the European Union that they will be also working on standards, that probably they are talking about mid next year. So I don't think we like to see two different type of standards or some type of overlapping. I know I'm not sure that you are dealing with this issue because obviously the major European countries have supported the creation of the new sustainability board. So, but anyway, I would like to know what are your views about these 2 points that are very key for us. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Javier. Giuseppe, how are you today?
Thank you, and thank you, and warm congratulations to Lee. I would like to ask about whether internally within the foundation, you are thinking that you need, or perhaps you don't need, a human resource enhancement or adding expertise to support the sustainability board, or if you think that everything is okay as it is now.
Thank you, Giuseppe. Nigel, and then we'll hear from Sybil, but Nigel first, please.
So thank you, Bill. Lee, thank you for your presentation, appreciate it, and again, congratulations to you and and the foundation for your achievements to date. I guess one of the things that we keep hearing is the importance of, as you mentioned, the emerging markets, you know, that the role that they would play in this space, and also the emphasis that, you know, we need to have a global footprint as far as the ISSB. I'm just wondering whether or not thought has been given to establishing perhaps one of the satellite offices or something of that nature in the emerging markets. It's one of the emerging markets. If you look at, for instance, all of the locations to date, sort of they're all in, you know, sort of developed nations. They're all in the Northern Hemisphere. There's nothing in Africa, nothing in South America. And if we have given thought to that, now, obviously, I know it's resources that and funding that would be important criteria, and it's probably more challenging to receive fundings from those areas. But I think because of those two emphases that we have, the need for a global footprint and the emphasis in emerging markets, perhaps thought can be given in establishing some sort of satellite office. I think that would indicate to stakeholders the importance that you are placing on emerging markets. So just a question and a thought all in one.
Good point, Nigel. Thank you. Sybil, over to you, please. And then Barbara.
Thank you. First of all, I would like to congratulate for the new board and thank you for all your efforts as well. My questions or comments is quite similar to Nigel's. I understood that a new board will be more widely dispersed compared to ISB. But in relation to emerging economies, I also understood that you are not planning to branch out any emerging economies at the moment, and rather you are planning to arrange a representation of them by other means. So I also would like to learn, are there any reason behind that? Because as like Nigel, I also thought that being located in a place might create new opportunities. You can understand them well. And also you can find new opportunities to create capacity building in those places. So you can align yourself better to emerging economies, then you can understand their concerns most probably better if someone related to new board lives in there. So you cannot just get direct information towards him or her. So yeah, I'm also thinking that you should consider having a branch or some sort of representation in an emerging economy as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Sybil. Barbara, please, and then Ken. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you, Bill, and our congratulations to Lee for the new board. We're very supportive of the focus on emerging economies and developing economies. And to that point, we note in your slides, the Sustainability Consultative Committee, you seek to have multilateral institutions, and I think I heard you say that you already have four identified. So if you're able to share with us which institutions those are, but multilaterals certainly are an extraordinary bridge to these emerging and developing markets. And if you have thoughts on what type of considerations and outreach you would be doing to engage additional multilaterals in that consultative committee, that would probably be effective.
Thank you, Barbara. Mm-hmm. Now, over to the Iron Man of the Advisory Council, Ken. Is it 3:30 in the morning in New Zealand?
It is indeed. Yes, 3:30.
Hello, Ken.
This may not be too logical, but first of all, let me add my congratulations to everybody else. So it's a fantastic achievement. that you've managed to get to, Lee. Well done, you and all your staff. And thinking about your questions about engagement with emerging markets and capacity building, I think there's another big kind of hidden issue there in terms of when we think about the capacity of the people we're engaging with. We need to think quite perhaps more broadly, more differently about our constituency, because our constituency to date has pretty much been investors and accountants, whether they're accountants as preparers or as auditors. But with this development, we're getting into sustainability offices, risk management offices, and reporting very much on their activities. And I think there's a capacity building exercise for them as they get used to meeting investors' needs, and accountants as they get used to testing and challenging and working with that constituency that is now I think part of IFRS's constituency, and I think this could be quite challenging because in many cases we're kind of moving really from PR exercises to investor useful information, and I think that's going to create some interesting challenges for the board. I was fascinated. There's an article in the Harvard Business Review, the very most recent review of Harvard Business Review, where the captain of Balanced Scorecard fame has basically queried the GHG protocol in terms of its usefulness of information, particularly on scope 2 and scope 3. That's a pretty interesting challenge, and it's something that I think that the integration, the idea of transition risks and physical risks that we've got in the prototypes that we've picked up from these other development bodies, but integrating that with the way enterprises actually do risk management, which can be objectives-based or scenario-based or taxonomy-based, will be quite some challenges there. So I think when we think about capacity building, I acknowledge and accept that it's a big issue for emerging markets and SMEs, but I think there's another dimension to that as well, which is the general capacity of our constituency, which I suggest is we've expanded quite a lot. So that was just my comment.
All right. Thank you, Ken. I'm going to give the floor to Martin Schlömer in a second. Before I do, let me read a comment from Maria Angeles. And the reason I want to read her comment is it's a good comment, first of all, and it is relevant to this discussion, obviously. I am conscious of the fact, though, that the chat room is not available to everyone attending this meeting. This is a public meeting. We will have a closed session that will be for advisory council members only. So I do want to get on the record Maria Angeles's point, and it pertains to SMEs. So. And here's a comment. The issue of the involvement of SMEs is very relevant. In Europe, the new sustainability directive doesn't apply to them until 2026, but with data from 2025, and that'll affect the information that others, like financial institutions, public entities, regulatory bodies, will have to provide. So she raises the issue of SMEs, and that's an important point. So thank you for raising that, Maria Angeles. Again, I think the chat room is really very useful, but if you'd like for something to go on the record, please raise your hand, your virtual hand, and I will call on you so that everyone on this in this meeting can benefit from your comment. Martin, over you, over to you, please, and then I'll turn to David.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. You also raised a question about the advisory council and meeting frequency and composition and so on. So probably a few thoughts to that before coming to a probably more challenging topic. So with regard to the advisory council, I guess while setting up the new board, you change from a run mode to well-established run mode into a change mode, so to say, and that could also then lead to the need for higher frequency of advice or exchange. Probably not that long as we currently have, so 4 hour meetings or so, but probably shorter meetings, and then it would be worse to have them virtually. With regard to the composition, if we take it seriously that the board is the advisory council is more or less consulting the two boards, at least it would make sense to have sufficient representative of both boards on board, so to say, for the exchange, and do not that separately. With regard, and I can only speak from the perspective of preparers, I guess many preparers need to deal with that from both perspectives, from a hardcore accounting perspective as well as from a sustainability reporting perspective. So it could be that one person fits all. Although for sure it might not be the absolutely hardcore sustainability expert, also with regard to the new developing European Union taxonomy or so. Which brings me to the next topic, which is, and also Andreas mentioned, that in future we are talking about disclosure standards and no standards on measurement. And for me, really, the question is, if there are competing ideas how to measure specific ESG factors or so, it probably would be worse to take a position what would fit best. But the most important thing for me, first of all, is to be clear about the reporting object. So what is the reporting object? Is it the same as we do use for accounting purposes? How do we deal with, say, portfolio changes and adjusting events like that, and how this then is also in line probably with other sustainability reporting requirements. And coming on from there, if you have a unique standardized way, you can further develop your reporting. Thanks.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Martin. David, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Bill. Lee, as someone who has worked for you for a short period of time directly and someone who worked for the trustees and the IFRS Foundation for 9 years, I have to personally say how proud I am to offer IFAC's congratulations for what was announced last week, and obviously extend IFAC's support as, you know, the initiative turns towards the development and implementation of standards. I just have one sort of question observation, and it's with respect to the multi-jurisdictional footprint that you and Erki addressed. As we've done our outreach over the last year and a half on this topic, it really is an important point in terms of the credibility, legitimacy, and we think the uptake of the new IFSB's standards, that there is this global footprint, this global impression that for nations out around the world, if I can say, particularly outside of Europe. So maybe it's an unfair question. I'd like you to ask, to maybe say more about how you think it's going to work, these various offices around the world. And if that's too unfair because it's early days, then maybe I'm just encouraging you to say more about it in the future and to think about how important that global engagement on the ground is going to be going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Well said. Let's hear from Ellen, please. And then after Ellen, Martin Boss. But Ellen first.
Hi. Thank you, Bill. And hello, everyone. And thank you very much, Lee, for the great presentation. And certainly congratulations and a big congratulations on what the IFRS Foundation has achieved so far, including the announcement of the IWSB at the COP26. I just want to express support for engaging the emerging market. This is a very important aspect. So they have their unique challenges and constraints, especially in terms of resource and capacity, talent, knowledge. However, climate change does not impact emerging market any less than it does the advanced economies. So this is very pertinent for them. And I think so far, as Lee presented, the proposal for the SEC and the jurisdictional advisory body plan to engage the emerging market or incorporate them in the membership, I think this is a very positive step forward to support this this direction. And I wonder if the IWSB and the Advisory Council membership will consider the same, not knowing what the plans are and so far. And also support the SME. Basically, we're talking about proportionality. So the climate disclosure, sustainability disclosure reporting can be very complex and challenging even for advanced economies, big companies. So having something more proportional to their size and resource would be welcome. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen. Before I give the floor to Martin, there's been a very interesting discussion in the chat room started by James and Neely has added in. And this is the prototype that was published last week and the nomenclature that it plans to use. So I'm going to ask Martin for Martin's intervention. And then after that, Neely, could you say a few words about this exchange you and James have had? Let me first go to Martin Bos. Martin, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Bill. Yeah, I cannot say how fulfilled I feel with the wonderful developments at the foundation. This is just mind-boggling what the foundation has accomplished, the trustees and the board and the ISB as well. So moving on to the question, because you actually had some questions on the sheet as well about how to expand capacity. And well, the short answer is higher, but the first answer is that you actually already did a really good job by expanding your capacity with the collaboration with the Value Reporting Foundation and CDSB. That's a true source of intellectual capital. Intellectual capital is more than the frameworks. It's in the people that you are going to integrate in your organization. A second source of resources may actually be very, very close to you. It's the existing staff of the foundation that may actually feel very attracted to endeavor into sustainability reporting as well. And this may even be the case for ISB board members. I mean, I think it would be very beneficial for the ISSB to take some of the DNA of the IASB by incorporating board members to hit the ground running with the quality and the due process DNA in there. And I think that would be really beneficial for the IASB. That said, about expanding collaboration. I think there's probably collaboration at two levels. One is aimed at adoption, and how do we get multiple jurisdictions on board? But the second one is probably more in the nitty-gritty. And this is a bit of a challenge because, well, in one way, you don't want to create, I think, a preferential status for any individual jurisdiction. While you do want to have nitty-gritty input and collaboration at a certain level. So I think that's a big challenge to foster collaboration with those jurisdictions that have the capacity to think along and make that a fruitful collaboration at that level as well. That's my comment. Thank you.
Well said, Martin. Thank you very much. Neely, can I press you into action, please?
Sure, Bill. I can give you my initial thoughts here. So James had asked a really good question about, in the prototype, there's reference to IFRS SX. And in the US, the SEC has regulation SX for financial reporting content and SK. And so he was wondering whether that would cause confusion with the US regulation SX. My understanding, and I will defer to the others from the organization, but my understanding is that X represents a number, so it would be IFRS S1 would be the first standard, IFRS S2 would be the second standard. So I don't think it would be quite as confusing because it doesn't have an SX in there. Hopefully that makes sense.
I believe that is correct. At least Sue supports that, Sue Lloyd. So thanks for explaining that. Let's hear from Aiko. Good evening, Aiko.
Yes, thank you. First of all, congratulations, Lee. I appreciate all efforts of IFRS Foundation trustee and staff for significant development regarding sustainability-related reporting. And I have some questions and observations. First of all, about the next step relating to that the members. You mentioned about that the next mid-December would be a next step. I understand that there is an announcement. Is that the announcement of the chair and vice chair and also the nomination for remaining members? Because I understand that the current situation, under the current situation, it is important to move quickly. However, I'm interested in the normal situation, when normal situation is achieved, because I understand ISB will normally comprise 14 members. And in order to take a good due process, the full members discussion is very important. So, and the next one, about the prototype, I appreciate significant efforts of TRWD to develop the prototype for climate and general disclosure, which covers very detailed, I think. However, I understand that the ISSB will develop IFRS sustainability standards as a comprehensive global baseline and feel that those prototypes, especially the climate one, seems to be a little bit beyond the baseline for me. So I'm imagining that I wonder how the prototype relates to global baseline and how to deal about that to the standard. And the third one, I understand the global footprint is very important. And you mentioned about that the Frankfurt and also that the San Francisco, that's the meaning of that the location. However, at the same time, what is the other places of the meaning? There are comments relating to the emerging places and so on, but about the Asia, Oceania region that you are considering about the Beijing and Tokyo. As you know, that Tokyo has an Asia Oceania office, but how to deal about that the other locations? And I'm very interested in that. Thank you.
Thank you, Aiko. Let's see. Nigel, over to you, please. Nigel James.
Thank you again, Bill. So my question is actually for Erki, or I'm not sure if he's still on, or perhaps Lee. So the foundation has they have announced the merger with the VRF and CDSP, and my question is, there's been a lot a lot of requirements already on the table for integration between ISSB and, you know, IESB, et cetera. But with this new merger that's taken place, sort of who is sort of the responsible party to ensure that the culture of the ISSB or the foundation is properly merged, you know, the different cultures of these three organizations coming together. At first I was thinking, well, perhaps the new ISSB chair is going to be sort of responsible for that, and therefore we'll be looking for someone with those skill sets. But it seems like this is bigger than just the ISSB, with the foundation being the one that's orchestrating the merger. So I guess my question was just, you know, sort of who is going to be responsible for pulling all of these organizations together, looking after the synergies and, you know, all of those things working together?
Thanks, Nigel. That's a really good question. Let's hear from Feng on behalf of Mr. Lee. Feng?
Okay. And thank you, Bill. First of all, we would extend our warmest congratulations on the establishment of the new ISSB. This is a remarkable progress, and the great efforts the foundation has made in this process is really appreciated. China MLF will continue to support the foundation and ISSB work. During the Third Belt and Road National Accounting Standards Cooperation Forum, which was just held a few days ago, we encouraged all the participant countries to provide support for the new ISSB to in developing the ISDS, which brings to the last point I want to mention is we are very glad that the engagement with emerging economies are widely recognized. We strongly agree that engagement with emerging economies are key to the success of the new board. So we are expecting broader involvement of these economies during the process of developing and implementing the ISDS. And I hope the opinions and concerns of these countries can be taken fully into consideration by the new board and the foundation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Feng. Okay, Yuri, please. Over to you, Yuri.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Lee, for the great update and congratulations on your achievement again. I have quick additional comments on the composition of the ISSB. So in the changed constitution of the foundation regarding the ISSB's composition, I understand that there are some interim measures, such as the ISSB normally comprises 14 members, but 8 members could be enough to start the board. And also until the ISSB comprises its minimum of 8 members, the chair and the vice chairs may publish exposure drafts for public comment on climate related disclosures. So my comments are, first, I believe that the most desirable case is clearly establish a full size board or a structure as similar as possible to a full-sized board, which have 14 members as a start, while ensuring diversity of board members. But also under the situations, these interim measures have to be taken you know, under the time limitations, the advisory council needs to carefully examine whether transparency of due process can be ensured under those measures in the work. That's it. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Yuri. You got in just under the wire. I was about to kind of summarize and then turn it to Lee, but let's hear from Garth.
Thanks, Bill. Congratulations, Lee, before you speak. Well done. I think the perhaps a different tangent, just thinking about the board as it's set up. In some ways, the IASB has had a relatively easy time of it in that there are accounting standard setting boards or bodies right across the world, and that includes the emerging markets. So I think one of the things that the board will need to do, particularly when it thinks about its composition, will be to think about how these standards will be enforced or used or will become the standard that everybody uses. And so that will mean engaging with people. I see you've engaged with the SFC in Hong Kong, for example, the providers of capital, for example. They will be important because they are the people who will demand that these standards are followed. Or is it, you know, we heard from the MOF in China that they may well mandate that a certain standard is followed. But it won't be as simple as it was for the IASB in having this become the standards that everybody has to adopt by one means or another. And I think engaging on that early, particularly in the emerging markets and thinking about where emerging markets capital is provided from, will be very important in the consideration.
Thank you, Garth. Good, very good point, Lee. Let me turn it to back to you for your responses. Let me just give a kind of a brief summary. First of all, kudos to you and the staff and the trustees. Just nothing but high praise. But I think also with the recognition that. A lot of hard work's gone into this, but there's going to be a lot of hard work ahead in getting the ISSB off the ground and engaging with the rest of the world and producing the standards. The emerging market and development and economies issue was raised a number of times. I like the way Sybil put it. This represents engaging with EMDEs represents an opportunity for the new board. There's also a capacity building opportunity here. And this is, again, in the context of the new board's co-locations. Javier raised an interesting point about the interaction with the European Union. And that's always a challenge for a global standard setting body, how to incorporate or how to take account of different jurisdictions. Standards that may have already been developed. On the EME, emerging market development economies issue, I thought it was well said. This speaks to the credibility, the legitimacy, and the ultimate uptake of the new body and the standards that it produces. Expertise and resources. For me, one of the most important things that came out of last week's announcement was the collaboration, the interaction with TCFD, the VRF, the CDSB. That Martin raised that point. For me, that was really one of the most important things, and that does really respond pretty directly to the resources and the expertise that's going to be that are going to be required. That's not as simple as it sounds. Was it Nigel, I think, who raised the question, who's going to be responsible for merging these cultures? I mean, culture under any circumstances is a difficult one. How to indoctrinate or how to develop an appropriate culture. But when you talk about merging cultures, it's good luck. Lee, I'd love to hear the answer on that. the implications for us as the advisory council, as I noted, one of the members, sorry, I don't have him readily available. What are the implications for us in terms of the frequency of our meetings, the duration of our meetings? That is something we need to pay close attention to. We've got one more body to serve, and that's the new board. Aiko raised a good question about what will be the nature of the new standards. I know all about minimum requirements or global baselines, but what does that mean in practice? And what does it mean in developing what that baseline is, what that minimum standard should be? That's an important consideration going forward. I didn't intend to try to capture every statement we heard. I know we will still come back with the written summary of this meeting, but those are some of the ones that stood out for me and some of the common threads.